Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Justice Stevens.
Good morning. Please be seated. The first case before the court this morning is Adam versus State, case 54121. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
We are, Your Honor. Good morning, Justices. Attorney for the State, my name is Jason Trout, and may it please the court, along with the Clark County Public Defender's Office, I will be representing the defendant in this case, also the appellant, Ramon Adam. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal at this time. We're here today in part because this court wishes us to address whether the procuring agent defense announced in Roy should be permitted to defend against the charges of possession of controlled substance and or trafficking charged under possession theory, as this court has previously held in Hillis and its progeny. I'm going to address that in more detail, but first I would like to address the factual reasons that the state gives for alleging that Mr. Adam is not entitled to this defense. And the reason I want to do that is because I think that can be laid out very quickly. The facts of this case, I'm sure this court is aware. Mr. Adam was targeted by a confidential informant. He was given to Metro. Metro put an undercover officer on him. This officer befriended him over a four-month period. We got into very great detail about how deep that friendship ran. At one point during the four-month period, Detective Wilson testified that Mr. Adam brought up that he had some quote-unquote connects with drug buyers. At the end of that four-month period, Detective Wilson asked on a specific night, "Can you get some meth for me?" And Mr. Adam said, "Sure, I can." And so they set up a buy. They had four detectives out there. They had it on video. That was the culmination of this investigation of 4 months. Now, it's important to note for the facts of the record that at the time that Mr. Adam tells Detective Wilson that he will arrange this buy for him, he also says, "This is the only time I'm going to do this." Okay, and he says, "From now on, you're having to do this on your own. I'm doing this as a friend." Now, the state has indicated that they don't feel that we're entitled to the procuring agent defense because at one point they, I think, assumed that there's some sort of theory of possession here because he had brought up the fact that he had connects at some point in a four-month period beforehand. They've also indicated that this is an initiation of the sale at some point in a four-month period beforehand. It is without dispute that on the night of the transaction, it was Detective Wilson and not Mr. Adam that brought up whether or not they could purchase methamphetamine and how. He asked Mr. Adam. Mr. Adam said, "I can do that." That's undisputed. Now, Mr. Adam handles the methamphetamine because he's sitting in the driver's side of his car and Detective Wilson is sitting on the passenger side. The drug dealers, or two Hispanic males, pull up. They walk up to the driver's side of the car. They hand Mr. Adam what is purportedly methamphetamine. He pulls a cell phone out of his car somewhere and opens it up, and it's not actually a cell phone, it's a scale. Now, the state wants you to assign some benefit to that because they're saying that why would he have a scale unless he was a drug dealer? Well, very quickly, Mr. Adam ran a tobacco shop. That's what he did. That's what he did at the time of this occurrence. That's what he did at the four-month period beforehand. He sold tobacco-type items. I'm sure we all know what these are. These little shops that operate within the law but on the fringes of it. So they have things that are technically legal but often used for illicit purposes. Doesn't mean he was using it for that, but that's why he had them. He had just closed his shop, and he had all of these things in his car. That's all in the record. He pulls out the scale, he weighs it, and he says to the guy, "This isn't what we agreed to do. This isn't the right way. Send it back." So they do that. Brings him some more. He weighs it again. He says, "This is it," and he gives it to him. This is the only time, and he gives it to Detective Wilson. This is the only time that Mr. Adam touches methamphetamine, as on the record, that the state has been able to testify to. It's the only time. It's incidental, clearly incidental. So on these facts, what we have is someone who has incidentally handled a controlled substance in terms of taking it from one side of the car and handing it to the other, weighing it in between, but we're talking about a span of a few seconds. It was also testified to that Detective Wilson then handed Mr. Adam cash, and that Mr. Adam handed that cash to the Hispanic male, who then promptly got in his truck and left. So we also know that he didn't receive any benefit from that, as was testified to on the record. So clearly, the procuring agent defense applies to Mr. Adam. And so on the date of trial, we were clearly entitled to that defense, and we weren't allowed to put it on. Now, the court gave us several reasons why he didn't feel that we should put it on, and none of those, I feel, hold water. The first was that the defendant didn't testify. Well, I pointed out to the judge that the defense doesn't have to testify, and we don't have to put on any evidence whatsoever. Well, then he reversed himself, and he goes, I'm not saying you have to put on any evidence, but sometimes if you don't, you don't get to put on a defense. I think clearly that's putting the burden on the defense. I think that clearly he's not permitted to do that, and I think clearly Mr. Adams' constitutional rights were violated.
Are you simply arguing that it was a theory of the case that you should have been able to present to the jury?
Yes, Your Honor, that's precisely what I'm arguing, is that regardless of what the state is going to argue later about whether or not we should keep this defense, the fact is that the law in the state of Nevada on that day was that on these facts, I was entitled to a per curiam agent defense, Mr. Adams was entitled to it, and I was prevented from giving it. The second reason that he gave was that at some point during the four-month period, Mr. Adams had mentioned that he had connects, and that constituted either possession on some wacky constructive possession theory, or that he had initiated a sale. Clearly, there has to be some contemporaneous time there wherein someone can initiate something. And I think that the court would agree with me that you can't simply bring up, hey, I know someone that can get you a good deal on some jeans, and then, you know, 3 months later have someone come back to you and go, hey, do you still have that friend? Yes, I do. Can you get those for me? Yes, he can. And even remotely suggest that I initiated on that day a contact to have my friend sell you some jeans. I mean, I think that it's absurd, and I think the court will agree with me. He also indicated that the instruction was untimely, and that is just simply not the case. We sat down, the court requested that we go over jury instructions prior to putting on the state's case, and so I sat down with Ms. Jimenez, and we went through all of the instructions that they had laid out at that time, and I told the judge's clerk that I wanted to let him know that depending on how the evidence laid out, we may be offering further instructions. I believe I also told the judge on the record that I'm reserving any other instructions that may come out, because at that time, my responsibility is that I cannot proffer instructions on something that the defense will not, I mean, that the facts do not support. And at that time, we didn't know what the facts were. Now, as soon as we found out what the facts were, at the very end of the state's case, I said, Your Honor, this is one of two theories of defense here, and we want to be able to offer these instructions. And he said no. He first said that I should be required to have submitted it in a motion in limine, which is clearly contrary to law. And then he said that I should have at least brought it up before the state put on their case, which is clearly a violation of my duty as an attorney to only proffer instructions with the evidence.
Mr. Trout, I'm a little bit confused about the timing of these discussions, if you could clarify something for me.
Sure.
When the judge rejected your assertion of the procuring agent defense the first time, when was that? At the beginning of trial, at the end of the state's case in chief, when you were settling instructions, when did that happen? When he offered the various reasons why he wouldn't allow the defense?
It was at the end of the state's case and in the proffer of additional instructions that happened at the same time.
Okay.
And so, I renewed.
So nothing pre-trial and nothing before jury selection and nothing before opening statements.
That's correct.
All right. So the state's case in chief closes. You inform the judge on the record that you want to offer the procuring agent defense, and it's at that time that he comments about your client not having testified. That seemed in, that's why I'm posing the question. Your client wouldn't have testified yet. So when did that happen?
I apologize, Your Honor. I believe that after the state's case closed, then we rested, and then we would have, but because we rested,
so the entire
after,
case was closed.
That's
when
correct.
This discussion occurred about your wanting to rely on a procuring agent defense instruction.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did you point out to the judge when the instructions were being resolved that the defense has a presumptive right to an instruction that advances its theory?
I did, Your Honor. And I did then, and I did several times thereafter in motions for mistrial and motions to dismiss, and I gave the judge every opportunity to allow me to offer my defense right up and until he charged the jury, until the jury left the room. I gave him every opportunity to do that because I expressed to him that my client has a right for the jury to hear his defense, and that so long as we have elicited facts that would support that defense, the jury has a right to hear it. And I was
okay, Mr. Trout, your time's running fast, so the real reason that we wanted to hear oral argument instead of reviewing all of the facts, although I appreciate the clarification, what do you make of the legislature's modification of the definition of the term delivery in the statute and its impact on Hillis? That's really, for me, the legal question here today.
Well, Your Honor, I would state that the delivery in the statute is applying to agents, as the state has pointed out, and their position is that that removes the agency defense. It is our position that clearly, as agent is defined under the very same statute, what it's talking about is pharmacists, nurses, doctors, and as I read that, what it's saying is that if you are a medical professional or someone who would normally be privileged to dispense narcotics, but you do so in a way that is illegal, you will still be held accountable for sale and distribution of controlled substances.
Okay. So the words, whether or not there is an agency relationship in the delivery definition, you believe, applies to agents as otherwise defined in the statute to include those legally authorized to dispense controlled substances?
I do, Your Honor, and I do very briefly for two very good reasons. First, because the definition of agent is delineated in the statute, because the statute was initially promulgated, adopted by Nevada in 1971 and again in 1990, and at no point during that 40-some-odd year period has the state legislature of Nevada at any point where they could have and have certainly been lobbied over and over again, taken a pen and wrote out, we mean this to be to dispense with a procuring-agent relationship or something to that effect that would have clearly gotten rid of it. They just haven't done that, and the state's asking you to take their spot and do that for them today.
Well, there are seven states in the country that have been faced with similar questions where their legislatures have made a modification like this and have interpreted that modification as dispensing with the procuring agent defense. What say you about those cases?
Well, Your Honor, clearly the idea of our system and the idea of the common law and the idea of federalism is that not every state has to take another state's interpretation. Otherwise, we wouldn't need a state Supreme Court. We could just get all of our directions from the United States Supreme Court or some federal derivation thereof. We can have different standards. That can be a floor standard, and we could have a ceiling standard. We've done that with many other things in the state. We've done it with double jeopardy. We've done it with other criminal statutes. The other thing that I would argue is that the state's position is that to change the law would be to bring Nevada into the line of states following this jurisprudence with respect to strict liability crimes for trafficking. But they're mistaken. It would bring Nevada into line with those states 10, 20 years ago, because these states now, the national trend, as they put it, is actually to move away from that, to move away from strict liability on drugs, to actually move away from the federal system being able to tell us what we can and can't do with respect to enforcement of our drug laws. And so I would say that Nevada can continue to do what they've done for the last 40 years and will be in right line with the national trend, in fact, be the leader in the national trend without having to have changed a thing when everyone else is doing the same thing in the next 10 to 20 years from now.
Other questions? And I'm going to give you an additional 1 minute because of the focus on Hillis and the procuring agent defense. So we'll add 1 more minute to your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Counsel.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Sonia Jimenez with the Clark County District Attorney's Office, and I'm representing the state of Nevada in this matter. I'd like to go, if I may, straight to discussing Hillis and the decision about whether the statutes are contrary to what the opinion in Hillis is. And I found when reading the other state cases and the other federal cases that originated the procuring defense when it came to sales, that the rationale behind that defense was that in those cases under the federal statutes and under the state statutes, the reason they wanted to have the procuring agent defense was because they felt that somebody who was an agent of or associated with the buyer should not be punished to the same degree as someone who was selling. Those crimes specifically punished only the sale of narcotics in those cases. It wasn't that the person who assisted the buyer should not be liable for any crime. It was that we think that punishment should be more commensurate with what a buyer might receive in the same circumstances because this person is acting on behalf of the buyer. And I think that the reason the Nevada legislature and the statutes that have been enacted demonstrate that that is something that we are not looking at in this case is because under the trafficking statute, it punishes everybody in the chain of the trafficking to an equal degree, whether or not you're the buyer, whether you're the person who handed the drugs over, whether you're the person who transported the drugs to the location of the sale, whether you delivered the drugs, whether you somehow brought those drugs into the state for the transaction. Everybody is facing the same punishment. And so the procuring agent defense isn't applicable in these circumstances because everyone in that chain is going to face the same punishment and the same liability. And that was clearly what the legislature intended when they enacted the Uniform Controlled Substance Act, and that's consistent with what federal opinions interpreting the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which our laws are based on, have found. And they've said that, look, they've changed the definitions, they've changed who they wanted to punish, and they've recognized that, hey, there's a whole chain that happens in drug transactions, and the justices know and the legislatures know that when you're dealing with drugs and trafficking in drugs, selling drugs, any of the crimes that are associated with controlled substances, that's something that does involve a chain of people. Let's take, for example, the facts of this case.
Well, I'm a little bit concerned about using the federal analysis because the federal analysis is premised on a definition of the word distribution. And your argument makes sense in the context of distribution. I'm not sure that the same can be said about the use of the word delivery in that context in our statute.
Well, we do have a similar definition, though. Our definition does track with the definition of the federal. And in fact, Mr. Trouth mentioned the definition of agent that is used in Nevada. That is, as well, the same definition that is used in the federal statutes that are in place. So we do track with those federal statutes and the definitions that were used by the federal court and that have been
used. But what's your argument or your response to his contention that the use of the word agency in that language in the statute, in our statute, should track the definition of agent in our statute, which deals with licensed agents of licensed persons who can make legal distributions of controlled substances?
Well, I think twofold. I think that agency and agent are, first of all, referring to two separate things. There's the Controlled Substances Act doesn't just address the criminal penalties, but there are other, things to do with the delivery or the administration of pharmaceuticals, prescriptions, things of that nature. And so I think that definition goes to that. But in addition to that, I would say that if the definition that we use of agent changes the exception in delivery to the exception saying it doesn't matter what the agency relationship is, then the same would apply in the federal situation because they have the same definition of agent within their Controlled Substances Act. And yet they still found in interpreting delivery that it did not include an agency relationship. I think as well that not just the trafficking statute, but in fact all of the statutes that have been propagated as part of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act do reflect this intention on the part of the legislature that we want to hold liable and hold to the same level of responsibility everyone who's involved in this chain of getting narcotics or trafficking narcotics or whatever term you want to use, but all the crimes associated with narcotics, we want to punish the people and find that it is a crime to the same degree the people that are involved with it. And for example, our what you might refer to as our sales statute, NRS 453.321, is different than, for example, New York sales statute. New York sales statute is referred to in Roche and Ortiz, as cited to by the defense, specifically only punishes the crime of sale, literally using that word, who sells a controlled substance. Our statute has not limited it just to sale. It's included transportation. It's included giving it away for free. It's included supplying it. All of those terms are included. Dispensing, I think, is another term that's included in that definition. So our legislature has moved away from this idea that we're only going to punish somebody who is making a profit at selling drugs. We want to punish somebody even if they're not making a profit. And that's another reason that the procuring agent defense, I think, is contrary to what the legislative intent is here, because So I just lost my train of thought. Because that when they're defining these different terms and not limiting it just to sale, they are saying that we want to punish these people at different positions and not for profit. The procuring agent defense, a lot of the arguments behind it and the reasons that the courts propagated it, they often said, look, the procuring agent is someone who's not deriving any benefit from the transaction. That's why they're in line with the buyer. Where our legislature has said, look, it doesn't have to be a transaction that involves money. There does not have to be a benefit to it. You can give it away for free and have no benefit, no, you know, not even a barter, not a, hey, maybe we're going to trade some services or whatever. You can just give it away for free. And the Nevada legislature has said that that is a crime. And so I think that's also consistent with the legislative intent being that we do not want to offer this defense. We want to hold liable those who are involved in the circumstance, whether they're gaining a financial gain from the transaction or not. I think, in fact, if you look at the facts of our case,
that's an example of another departure from the uniform or from the Federal Controlled Substances Act, isn't it?
It is, but it's also consistent with some of the other states that have enacted similar laws that have included this other language, and it's certainly distinguishable from, for example, the New York cases that I mentioned and the statutes there that simply use the word sale. And also in those New York cases, in both Roche, and actually they mentioned it in Ortiz as well, they mentioned the fact that their statutory scheme is aimed at punishing those who are involved in sales of narcotics. I think in Roche they say that the thrust of the statutes is not at purchases, and in Ortiz they mention that the penal statutes are directed primarily to the seller. And I think that's distinguishable from what the Nevada legislature has done here in this circumstance. And certainly there are reasons for that, because there is a chain that's involved in narcotics transactions. For example, let's make a hypothetical based on the facts of this case. Mr. Adams says, well, I was acting on behalf of the buyer. I wasn't acting on behalf of the seller. Let's say that the police had been able to track down the two Hispanic males who brought the narcotics. They may be able to say the same thing. Hey, you know what? We're not selling the narcotics. We know our friend Ramon Adam. He said, hey, do you know somebody who has some drugs? We're not acting on behalf of the seller either. We got our drugs from John Doe. John Doe says, you know, I'm not acting on behalf of the seller either. I happen to know these two Hispanic guys. They're friends of mine. They said, hey, you know, our friend wants to buy some narcotics. John Doe's brother, James Doe, happens to cook methamphetamine, but he cooks it in Mexico. And he says, so I went to my brother. I didn't get any benefit from it. I'm just trying to help out a friend. And suddenly we followed the chain back to the person who actually cooks the methamphetamine, who we can't even prosecute because he's not in this state or in another country. And I think, although that's, of course, hypothetical and maybe not the case in all situations, I think that the legislature has recognized the fact that it does cause a problem if you're trying to, you know, we as a state and as a legislature have decided that we do want to find controlled substance criminal, that we want to find conduct involving that. We see that as a detriment to our society. And if the goal then is to prohibit that conduct by prosecuting individuals, then that's something that causes a problem in that prosecution and in that punishment for those offenses, because it makes it difficult to track down who we're going to find liable in these situations.
But in doing so, the legislature has subjected the person who is essentially the handoff, in this case Adam, to the same penalty as the one who cooked the methamphetamine.
Well, as the person who sold it, actually, I think the person who cooked it would actually be liable under a different statute that has actually more severe punishment. But I know the point that you're making.
You convict that person of the trafficking charge, you've got the same person. So that's why
true,
we have mules in our prisons who are sentenced to life imprisonment, and their role in the drug trafficking transaction was to drive a car from San Francisco to Utah.
But at the same time, Justice, I would also say that the person who bought the narcotics would also be liable to the same punishment. Let's say, in this case, it happened to be an undercover officer, but let's say that it was not an undercover officer. It was somebody who ultimately was charged in the transaction. They, as the person who received the methamphetamine, would also be liable under the trafficking statute. And the purpose of the procuring agent defense historically has been to put this middle man, if he's actually not even a middleman. They say a middleman would be associated with a seller, but a person who's associated with the buyer as a buyer's agent to the same penalty as the buyer. And our statute holds the buyer to the same penalty that Mr. Adam faced and that the person who did the exchange faced. I certainly understand the court's concern. However, I think that that's something that is within the legislature's purview to make the
decision.
It's
a legislative call.
Sure.
Exactly. And, you know.
I have one final question, if I may, on this point. The language, whether or not there is an agency relationship, when was that added to the delivery definition?
If I could have a moment, I don't know that offhand, but I think I might be able to find it for you just briefly.
If you have it handy, if not, I'll look it up when we finish.
I apologize, Justice. I do not have that handy offhand, but I can certainly do research on that. Just since I have a few minutes left, unless there's other questions, I just want to address a few things raised by Mr. Trowell. I do think that Judge Herndon, when he made the decision not to provide the instruction, there were several things that were stated on the record, but ultimately the basis for his decision was that he felt in his discretion that there was not sufficient evidence to merit the instruction. The defense is entitled to an instruction that encompasses their theory, but there does also have to be evidence in the case, and Judge Herndon, having sat through the trial, looked at the case and found that there was not evidence. I think that while he mentioned some concerns about the timing because he had asked for instructions ahead of time, and I would point out that this is not a case where there was some surprise on the stand, some new information that came out that changed the case. This is something under these particular facts, and obviously there might be different circumstances in another case, where this was something that there wasn't any surprises that were happening here. And this, as the defendant, who is the person who knows who he has an agency relationship with, he knows whether or not he's working for the sellers or buyers, he's going to know ahead of time what his defense was. But the court found that there wasn't sufficient evidence to support that instruction. I don't think he was saying that the defendant had to testify. However, he was saying that maybe in a circumstance where the defendant had testified, there might be additional evidence. And certainly that wasn't, in the end, the basis for his decision. He based it on the evidence that was presented and what he felt was merited based on the evidence in the case.
Wasn't he entitled to an instruction on his theory of the defense?
Well, I agree with the judge. I don't think that there was evidence of his defense that was presented in this case. The defendant tries to make light of the fact that the detective testified that he indicated that he had connects with the drug industry. Well, the implication and the context of that statement was, I have connects, meaning I can get you narcotics if you need them. It wasn't just in casual conversation, hey, I have some connects. The point of it was, hey, I can get you narcotics if you need them. And that is initiating a sale, because that's initiating a relationship wherein we're going to provide drugs, there's going to be money exchanged. And this is the initiation of that. And I think that's what the judge found, and that's what I believe to be the case as well, that it was not, under these facts, something that there was enough evidence to support. Under different facts, with different evidence, or other witnesses who had testified, certainly I'm not arguing that Hillis is not the current state of the law. I'm simply arguing, A, that in this particular case, under these facts, he was not entitled to it. And then, B, of course, we are advocating that Hillis is not consistent with legislative intent and that Hillis be overruled, because the procuring agent defense should not apply not only under trafficking, but frankly, I think the entire Uniform Controlled Substances Act has essentially eliminated the procuring agent defense, but obviously we're here specifically under the trafficking statute. And then just lastly, a minor point, but one of the things mentioned by Mr. Trowell was that the scale could have been used because he ran a tobacco shop. I just want to point out there wasn't actually evidence or testimony about why Mr. Adam had that scale. He did own a tobacco shop, but that wasn't something that was evidence that was presented. That's something that has been said simply in argument. And that the defendant did, in fact, send the drugs back twice. The first time for quality, he said it wasn't sufficient quality. The second time the drugs were brought to him, he weighed it. He said it wasn't enough. He sent them back to get more drugs, bring those drugs, the weight was appropriate, and then he handed it off. So with that, I think I'm just about out of time, if I'm reading the timer right.
14 seconds.
Thank you. Thank you, Justices.
Thank you. Mr. Trump?
I will say that I agree with the state on one thing right off, which is that everyone in the courtroom knew that the procuring agent was the appropriate defense based on the evidence, and the first person to know that was the judge. And I know this because the judge said this on the record before we'd ever discussed instructions or anything else, even when he sua sponte called Mr. Adam the procuring agent in this case. So we agree in that respect. I think the most important thing for this court to consider are the ramifications of overturning Hillis. And let's talk a little bit, just briefly, about the reasons behind it. The idea is, as Justice Hardesty essentially pointed out in his questioning, I think, is that there are different levels of culpability within a certain scheme. And if we didn't believe that, we wouldn't have a common law system. We'd have a civil law system, and we would try to ascribe for every possible outcome that could happen. And we've never done that. We've said a long time ago that we can set out things that we basically think are wrong. But at the end of the day, it's the citizens in the community that get to decide whether or not someone should be held liable. And this is a perfect example. The procuring agent defense, if it's removed, is going to accomplish one of two things. First of all, the only people it's going to apply to, generally, are going to be the friends and family of drug users. I mean, let's talk about this for a second. There, a lot of people, even though it's illy motivated and probably not very well thought out, will very often attempt to help friends and loved ones who are in deep, deep and dire drug addiction, attempt to get their things to feed them, not to keep them on it. They want them off it more than anything, but at that time, they'll go out and they'll help them because they don't know what else to do. I'm not arguing that it's right, but I'm saying that we all know that it happens. These are the people that are going to be caught up. It's not the drug dealers, because the drug dealers profit. It's not the users, because the users get the drugs. The only people the procuring agent defense applies to are the people who aren't selling and aren't using. They're the people in the middle who are making essentially bad decisions. I just don't believe that the legislature is intended to make the net that big. And I think if they had, they could have easily done it and done it explicitly. The second thing is that you're going to take away the jury's determination of where to assign that level of culpability. Because right now, if the jury were entitled to hear the procuring agent defense on that day, or even the entrapment defense on that day, and they were going to hear it today in another case, they can say to themselves, okay, we've heard all the facts. We know what middle person here was doing. We know that he was acting on behalf of someone that he thought was his friend, or someone that he was related to, or someone he had a relationship with, to get these drugs. We know that he didn't profit. And in our opinion, as citizens, as jurors in the state of Nevada, we can see that that might be illegal, but we have this defense that's available to us because we don't believe that this person should go to prison for the way they acted. If we take away procuring agent, we take that away from the jury. And essentially what the state is asking this court to do today is to not continue to trust the citizens of Nevada like this court has for the last 40 years, that has put it in the jury's hands. They didn't want it in the jury's hands on that day, they don't want it today, and they don't want it tomorrow. And that's simply the wrong jurisprudence to take, and this state has never taken it, and I urge you not to take it now.
Thank you, Mr. Trath.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jimenez. This case will stand submitted. Before we